Guess what, Muslims? It's our 70th anniversary. And what better way to celebrate than by bringing back the OG jingle that started it all? Press play, sing along, and take a trip down memory lane with us, because this moment, this milestone, is all thanks to you. Now enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. I am Mo Sibel, and this is the Mo Sibel Podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's our anniversary, and to celebrate, I feel like today is like special, like full circle, goosebumps kind of special. When this podcast was still finding its feet 7 years ago, our guest for today was one of our very first guests who took a chance with me in this tiny but mighty show. And what a conversation that was. Back then, she was living in Beijing. She was mentoring third culture kids and helping bridge the gap between the lives they were living and people, trying to understand them. She shared from her heart, from her research, and from her years of lived experience growing up between cultures. Today, we're connecting to find out, where is she now? What has changed? What has remained? And what has surprised her along the way? If you've ever wrestled with the concept of home, of belonging, or identity across borders, this one is for you. So everyone, please join me in welcoming back to the podcast, Miss Tanya Crossman.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be back with you.
Same here. Same here. So to our listeners, before we go on, before I hit the record button, myself and Ty had that moment of, my goodness, was it 7 years ago we last had a conversation? And I mean, yes. And so let's just get right into it. So it's been 7 years since your
70
episode aired,
years.
which still holds up, by the way. That's one of the most beautiful things about podcasts. It's always evergreen. What's changed the most in your life since then?
Everything. Genuinely though,
Okay.
we talked at the end of 2018, and from
Yes.
there on out, everything in my life got turned upside down. That was around the time I got my asthma diagnosis. I was in hospital overnight with massive asthma attacks in Chinese, where my poor husband, where I'm the Chinese reader and speaker really in the marriage, he's trying to deal with that. And then 6 months later, I had a massive concussion. Basically, lost my ability to read, write, research, do mental math,
No
everything.
way.
Had to put all of my projects on hold because I couldn't
Did
do
you have a
anything.
fall or you got into an
I just
accident? What happened?
slipped on the bedroom floor and whacked my head.
Whoa.
But I gave myself a grade two concussion with nerve damage, just slipping and falling at home. And I would say I have got 95% of my brain function back, but it took a long time. But one of the things that did was I ended up focusing on my presenting work because I
Okay.
couldn't focus on my research and my writing. I couldn't. I started at 12 minutes at a time on the computer. It took me basically a year and a half, 2 years to get to 2 hours at a time on the computer. So instead, I started focusing on presenting work and discovered I really, really enjoyed being in front of big groups and teaching on TCKs and that kind of caregiving, working with some of the big international schools in Beijing. Ended up with contracts with a couple of schools and traveling to speak to schools in different places, including South Korea. And
Oh, nice.
so all of this stuff was happening. My business was booming. My husband's business was booming, and then we hit the pandemic.
COVID.
So I was visiting schools in Southeast Asia when all hell broke loose in March 2020. And the short version of the story is that I was outside when China cancelled all visas on March 26th, 2020. And I no longer had a work visa for China. So my husband is sitting in Beijing in our apartment with all our stuff, and I'm on the other side of the border and I can't go back. We don't share a citizenship. And during the pandemic, it was really hard to go anywhere. So he couldn't come to me, I couldn't go to him. We gave it a couple months to see if things would change and then made the call, and he packed up our stuff and moved to the States. So he was in the US and I was in Australia. I was able to go visit him for a couple of months, and then we put in the paperwork for me to get a green card. But I couldn't do that in the US. I had to leave. So I left and he put the paperwork in, and we have been working on that paperwork ever since. The green card paperwork was easy. The immigration paperwork has been tricky. So I'm living with my parents in Australia. My husband is living in our apartment in the States.
My goodness. I mean, we know it's been 7 years, and even the way you just summarized everything you've gone through right now, it felt like it was just like a week-long episode. But I imagine that from the, you know, asthma attack to the concussions you had, and then COVID, and then the separation, and second wave of separation.
Mm-hmm.
How are you holding up in all of this?
Look, honestly, for a good while, I didn't do well. It was about a year and a half there that it was a good year after really landing in Australia where I wasn't coping properly. I went to my GP and I got a mental health plan and I saw a psychologist and I got on medication and got myself sorted. And a big part of what helped me was that I had nephews here. My youngest nephew was born shortly after I arrived here. And that just gave me a way to be present in the moment and be like, this is a good thing that I can be doing. Is being Auntie Tanya and being present with them. And I learned a lot about living in limbo, and I learned a lot about creating joy where you are, even if it's not where you want to be. I learned a lot of lessons, and I was able to use those lessons over time. And as I was getting to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to start looking at what my business is going to be from here, because it can't be what it was before. Lauren Wells reached out to me. Lauren is the founder CEO of TCK Training, and it was a perfect timing because she's one of the only people I've met who we really have the same philosophy in terms of TCK care, which is that it's all about preventive care. What can we do that will support young people growing up abroad so that they have a better long-term prospects and they can thrive lifelong? And so we ended I ended up joining TCK Training by... At the beginning of 2021, it was just Lauren. By the end of 2021, there were four of us who are now the leadership team running a company with over 20 staff. I head up the research department and the international education department. So I spend half my time doing brand new research on the experiences of third culture kids and helping articulate that for everybody. And the other half of my time working with international schools around the world. So I travel to schools to do in-person content, and I create resources for them as well.
Wow. And how, when was, and thanks for sharing all of that. It seems that despite what life has thrown at you, you've been able to make the most out of it. And you said 95% of your brain capacity. It's amazing how you mentioned that, because I read somewhere that even as humans, like, we use like what, 10 to 15% of our brain capacity. So for you, it's almost like a conscious decision to make sure that you are reactivating those nerves and being very, very intentional about how you
When I started the job, I was still at the point I couldn't really do more than 20, 25 hours a week as an average. Some weeks I couldn't do that. Now I'm at 30 hours a week for TCK Training, plus I'm doing 10 hours a week on my other projects as well. Yeah. And I can do that consistently even with all my health issues. So my brain has bounced back in so many ways, and I've learned a lot of tools through those hard years that I can use now.
Thank you for sharing that, by the way. And I'm sorry to hear about your husband's situation. When was the last time you guys saw each other?
He was able to travel with me while I was working in Southeast Asia at the end of 2023. So we had sort of 5 weeks together in October, November 2023.
It's been 2 years.
So that's just over a year, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, are you planning to meet up like on neutral ground, like maybe somewhere?
We don't have anything planned right now. Well, because we keep thinking that I'm going to be there because we've got all
the things, I know.
And then something gets... We think it's going to happen, and then a document gets rejected.
Something happens, Well, I hope that happens very soon for you, so we can be reunited.
This is one document really that's giving us trouble, so we just need to get that one document accepted.
And I'm also the more encouraged because of the kind of line of work you do. I imagine that this experience of knowing the kind of person you are, that is, whenever you have students you're working with and they talk about immigration pain, you'll be like, let me tell you a story.
I have just lived through it. Here's how you survive.
Yeah, there's definitely some empathy building there for sure.
Yes, I've been able to use this, another colleague
and I put together a workshop on living in limbo and what we can do when we're in these in-between spaces. Because, okay, maybe this is an extreme example of that, but so many people go through these in-between spaces, whether it's that you've lost a job and you don't know what life is going to look like until you can find another job. Or like me, you got a visa kind of denied or cancelled. Or you, you know that you're going to be moving, but you don't know when. Like when my family growing up, my dad's job, you'd be waiting several months for the call that says, now you're moving. There's all kinds of ways we can be in limbo. And
a lot
of those skills kind of transfer. And at another point I was facilitating a sort of support group for people who'd been displaced from China and Hong Kong during the pandemic. I did a couple of those. And everything we go through gives us something we can offer to others.
Yeah. For people who want to offer it, that, not that it's wrong to not offer stuff, but I feel like the way I live my life now, like when I learn something, I just want to keep sharing it. It's also a way of healing through whatever I've gone through. All right. So when you think about who you were in 2017, when last you were on the podcast, what would surprise her the most about your life today?
Wow. I mean, obviously, the having lived separate from my husband this long would be surprising. But also, I think the relationship I have with my niece and nephews here in Australia, I never thought I'd get to be an in-person aunt. And so I think she'd be blown away by that. The working relationships I have at TCK Training, having colleagues who, even though we live in different countries to each other, we have this really tight working bond, and that has been such a huge joy for me. And it's helped me to grow personally and professionally. And so I think that would be a huge surprise, in a good way, for sure. And yeah, how I'm growing as a writer. You know, I don't really blog much anymore, but I do so much research, and I've got another book out, and I'm writing a third one. Like,
I saw that.
This huge part of who I am. And I'm facilitating writing groups for other TCKs, and you know, this writer researcher part of me is now sort of moving into a space where I can help others in their research and their writing.
Would you say over the past 7 years, and it could be maybe a little bit longer than that, have you had some shift in some of your values or even your thought processes? Say, for example, you held this belief or these thought processes 7 years ago, but that has shifted now based on some of the experiences you had along the way.
I definitely had some big shifts in who I am as a direct result of that concussion and the recovery. I'm a different person in some really fundamental ways because of going through that. One had already started, and that was recognizing how not caring for myself physically. I have a whole bunch of different chronic illnesses and chronic pain issues, and that I would always push myself and overdo it. But recognizing that that was impacting my husband, that I would have no energy when I got home and I'd be in pain, and that my pain impacted him. But the concussion brought that home in a whole new way. Learning to care for myself better, becoming much more in tune with my body than I ever have been, has enabled me to care for myself better. I have a friend who had a different physical interruption around the same time. So for her, it was epilepsy, grand mal seizures brought on by pregnancy. Yeah, that's what triggered it. I mean, there must have obviously been something there genetically already, but that stress on her body is what triggered the epilepsy, and she was having regular seizures, and she couldn't drive anymore. It took her years to get her license back, because you have to go a whole year without a seizure before you can get your license back. So she was dependent on everybody else, and like me, there was impacts on her mental abilities. And like me, she'd always been, you know, prided herself on her intelligence and how, quick-witted she was and that. And we were both talking about, in particular, maths, right? So I remember being maybe two years out from my concussion, and I still couldn't add a two-digit number and a one-digit number together and be confident I had the right answer without checking on a calculator. And we were talking about how we used to, now looking back, realized that we used to be condescending towards people who used calculators for things we could do in our head. And it was hitting us, and now we're the people who can't do it in our head, and we need the calculator. And it hit us how ableist and how arrogant and how just nasty that attitude was, where we thought people were being lazy for using calculators.
Right.
And it was something that I don't think either of us had consciously realized in ourselves before that point. That we had that attitude. Because to us it was just so obvious. You can do it in your head. Why would you use a calculator? Because we didn't realize that other people couldn't until we couldn't. And as someone who has so many chronic issues and things I physically cannot do, it was a real shock to the system to be like, oh, look at the ableism in you in a different way, in a different area. And we both recognized as we're catching up, I'd been traveling and I went through her town and we caught up, that we had both gone through this same process of realizing that we are nicer people on the other side of this.
Wow.
Right? That we are learning to be more kind and more humble and more compassionate to ourselves and to others. And that we're thankful for this lesson that we've learned, because this is who we want to be, is a kind and compassionate and humble human being. And we had these blind spots that we didn't even see were there. And so I think there's been some big shifts in who I am, in what I expect of myself and what I expect of others, in the way I see others and therefore treat others who are struggling, the capacity I have for kindness and compassion, not as a theoretical value, but as a practical thing I can live out. I think that's changed in me in ways I'm very thankful for, even if I didn't like the process through which it happened.
Right. Life has a way of just, making, like, almost like forcing you to, and actual experiences, hopefully, if you can learn from others, great, and that lesson was taken. But I feel like until you go through some stuff, you don't really learn that lesson that is needed, right? And one of my very good friends, he's a psychiatrist, and he used to be one of the co-hosts of this podcast. He had shared something about when life happens to you, one of the ways to kind of triumph over that is how you give it meaning, like defining what that meaning means to you. And now, not everything you'll be able to make meaning of. I mean, like, a child getting molested, what kind of meaning can you get from that? Maybe as you grow older, you're able to, like, acknowledge the hurt that was done to you, and then maybe that can help you with the life's purpose of rescuing other, kids who might be in that kind of dangerous situation. But all I'm just trying to say here is that the meaningfulness behind your experiences, the time, the moment you're able to carve that out, there's a way you experience growth from that process, right? I think that's what you're trying to say. And I just want to say thank you so much for beautifully capturing that. But I'm curious to know, though, maybe this is more of just a curiosity question, so feel free to ignore it. What does the conclusion feel like?
Well, in my case, it felt like I could feel my brain bounce inside my skull. Like, I've had migraines for 35 years. I am very aware of a lot of different kinds of extreme pain from different parts of my body. My head has never hurt like that before. Like, it was a pain that I couldn't speak. So my husband was sleeping in the other room that night because we had to get up really early in the morning and neither of us are good at sleeping. And there were two doors closed between where he was and where I was. And I hit the ground so hard it woke him up. But I didn't say anything because I physically couldn't. Like, I wanted to cry out for him and I just wasn't capable of making speech. By the time I could, I was like, maybe I should go and wake him up. And in hindsight, I really should have. but then he heard me get up because I went and got some ice. And he's like, okay, she must be fine. But yes, one of the lessons I learned, just go and get help.
right.
So that wouldn't happen again. But I saw stars, but like there was definitely things flipping in my eyesight. Like it went dark on the edges, but I didn't completely pass out, or it would have been a grade 3. And it was like my whole head felt, you know, when you get like kind of an ache in your body and it kind of has that pulsing feeling. It's like that feeling, but for my whole head. And as I started to recover, there was this very clear process when I overdid it. At first, I would feel just a light pressure on the piece of my head that had hit the ground, right around my temple, on my right side. And if I kept doing sort of brain activity, that would turn into kind of a numb, tingly feeling. And if I kept doing activity, that would turn into pain. And if I kept going, that would turn into a blinding headache that would last a day or two and I'd have to be in bed. And because it was so sudden like that, I had to learn to tune into my body, because those small feelings and sensations were the only warning I was going to get. At the beginning, I couldn't walk more than 5 minutes. The difference between 5 and 10 minutes was a day in bed afterwards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my body was just so sensitive to everything. I think what helped me most is I had several friends who had either had bad concussions and post-concussion syndrome, or had close friends who had, and they reached out to me and gave me some advice. And the best advice I got was that your brain is what is injured, so you cannot trust yourself right now.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yes, and I found that so helpful. It's like the brain is what distinguishes what you need and, you know, whether you're okay or not. But your brain is the one that's injured right now. And it never occurred to me.
And essential for everything, your perception, your processing of information, your emotional,
Yeah, it never occurred to me before that, like, if your brain's injured, what do you do with it? And one of my biggest symptoms, well, one weird one was that I lost some of my temperature control, and I'd get these random,
what's that?
I would get these random fevers out of absolutely nowhere.
Oh my goodness.
And it might only last like an hour or half an hour, because I wasn't sick. It was just that my body had lost the ability to manage my temperature. And I would just suddenly overheat, kind of like having hot flashes, but like just randomly because of my concussion. But the biggest one for me was I lost my emotional control.
Oh no.
I couldn't sort of filter and buffer my emotions. And at first I thought I was just having panic attacks. I mean, I was having panic attacks basically. But when I went and talked to my GP about it, she's like, because I was like, I think I need anxiety medication because I'm not coping. And she listened to everything and she goes, because this would have been 6 months after concussion. I'm like struggling with these issues. And she's like, I think this is the concussion. I mean, yes, it's anxiety. And yes, we'll get you some anxiety medication, but
it's from a concussion.
It's the concussion. It's a result of the concussion. Because what it sounds like is, and she explained that this was a very common side effect for some people with concussions. And talked it all through, and I'm like, and explained, like, this is what it looks like when it's a concussion. Like, oh my gosh, that's what's been happening. Emotions would just build up, like, or there was no gap between feeling something and there was just no space. And so I couldn't calm down if things got big. And so she put me on a very low dose of an anti-anxiety medication and said, this one is known to work in this particular case, and just huge difference almost overnight. But the having the right doctors also was really helpful. And I think it might have been a bit different if I'd had those doctors immediately. But, you know, you're in China and the way things are treated are differently. Like, I got the MRAs and the MRIs.
And they might have been communication kind of too as well.
But I'd lost my ability to communicate in Chinese immediately. So I was taking friends with me to my doctors. Because I could barely communicate in English, let alone Chinese in those first
couple of
But it was really fun watching the difference because I'd go to all these different follow-up appointments. The first appointment, I could not communicate in Chinese. The second one, I could understand the Chinese, but I couldn't really say much. By the third appointment, I could do it all myself because you could see my brain like recovering over time, over the course of 2 months or so, which was just fascinating. The brain is just fascinating to me.
And as you were saying that, okay, where do you go when your brain is, you know, broken? Because I imagine that, like, if your one hand is broken, you compensate with the other hand. Yeah. Like, if you know what, but the brain is like, where do you go from there?
If you're me, you have a really lovely husband who takes good care of you.
Takes of everything. Shout out to him, by the way.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Shout out to him, by the way. Yeah.
And helping me keep track. Like, had I eaten? Do I need to go home? Do you need to stay home and not go out to this thing? Yeah. Asking those questions that would prompt me to check in with myself because I was still learning to do this. And that was really helpful. And the other thing I did was I was like, okay, what can I do? And lean into that. I can't really work. What can I do? He almost immediately got me an Audible subscription so I could listen to audiobooks because I couldn't read and reading was one of my huge passions.
So I started
listening to audiobooks and that's still what I do now. And I love cooking and cooking was something I could do. For the first time in my life, I was following actual recipes because I'd forget where I was up to. And I would do a bit and sit down and do a bit and sit down and do a bit, but I started doing all of our cooking, at which point he was like, oh, this is actually really nice being cooked for all the time. I'm like, kind of had this for the last year or year and a half, but you insisted you weren't going to make me a housewife. but like finding things I could do and leaning into that, what can be my creative outlet? You know, instead of worrying too much about the things I couldn't do, just enjoying what I could do and being really gracious to myself. Lots of sleeping, lots of lying on the couch and not feeling guilty about that.
Yeah. And I imagine that was an adjustment for you, especially having to accept that help.
Oh my gosh.
And
yes.
Knowing that, hey, yeah.
Yes.
If I remember, you're very, very, you know, efficient and you like to get things done and you're fiercely independent. And now you were there in such a vulnerable way and then being able to.
So I just
what that knew in your mouth was going to be.
Okay. But it's been really good. I mean, this is what I say. I'm a different person in a really good way. Yeah. I am more vulnerable and I am better about asking for and receiving help. And I'm much better about giving myself space and grace, about listening to my body and go, my body is not in a position to concentrate on work. So I'm going to take a break. And the job that I have makes this so possible. TCK training has this focus on psychological safety that is true for employees. And I have a job where I can say to my co-workers, I need to take a day off. I can't, my brain needs a break. And everyone goes, great, take a break. We love that for you. And if there was one week where we had stuff that needed to get done and I had hit my limit and I couldn't do anymore. And so I sat down with my supervisor and we worked out what needs to get done and who can do what to make sure what needed to get done would get done and that I got the rest that I needed. And there's this space where I can learn how to do what I can do and rest as much as I need to rest and be responsible because I have a team that work with me to do that and it extends to everybody in the team. That there's this priority of wellness, which allows me to keep listening to my body and keep getting better at this.
Thank you for sharing that. And what you just said now reminded me of a time I had a major surgery. And I've talked about it on the podcast. I had a laparotomy to get rid of fibroids and ovarian cysts. And it was such a huge surgery. I had to go back to Nigeria to get it done because there was nobody else and there was no doctor around me, a surgeon who was willing to take the risk. I would complain about the pain. I'd had maybe about 6-7 surgeries just before then. And so whenever I went back, they were like, oh no, we can't take any more chances with you. I recall there was one of the surgeries I was prepped for, paid the money, I was wheeled in, and then I was wheeled out. And I felt like something is off. This felt so quick. And the doctor was like, well, we couldn't cut you open because it was so, almost like someone opened you up and poured cement into you. We couldn't like see anything and we didn't want to nick a wrong nerve and then have you bleed out on the table. So ever since then, I didn't find a surgeon who was willing to operate on me. So I went back home. And thankfully, I got the care that I needed.
Mm.
And ever since that surgery, my body reacts to me different. Like, I can feel things more.
Mm.
I can feel anxiety, like something heavy falling into my stomach. I can feel pain more. Like, my cues, my emotional cues are much more quicker.
Yeah.
You know, thanks to that surgery. And so something good came from that surgery. Like, I'm more in tune to my body. Like, I take something and my body's quick to react. I can eat something. If I eat something, I'm able to react. Oh, that doesn't feel good. I'm not going to eat that. No. But before then, I was in so much pain. So much pain. I didn't know how much.
You tune out everything else when you're in pain like that.
It's like a loud megaphone. Like, yes. All you focus on is pain, and then you lose everything else. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Enough about health. Sorry. Sorry.
I've been in pain my whole life, and so I tuned down all those pain cues.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I don't think it's us tuning down as much as that's what pain does to us, right?
Yeah, yeah, it does. It blurs out everything.
Rewires your brain. Yes, and
I think also you find this in people where if we want to numb emotional pain, you also numb all the good emotions too.
Yes. Right?
And so when we turn down our sensitivity to our physical pain, we're turning down everything else too. And that's one of the things that I had to relearn in my concussion recovery was how to listen to my body. And I discovered that there were so many things happening with my chronic illness that I wasn't really connected to because I've turned down the pain sensitivity so much that I just, when I got re in touch with my body through the concussion recovery, I started getting able to better cope with all my other chronic conditions because I was listening to the early warning signs. Rather than not feeling it until it got really bad, which is what I'd done as my coping strategy throughout my young life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fascinating, right? Like,
right? Yeah.
How we interact with our own bodies.
Thank you for sharing all of that. Now let's talk a little bit about your work with TCKs. You've spent so much of your career working alongside.
20 years now. This year's 20 years I've been working with TCKs.
That's a career defining moment right there.
Yeah.
and for our listeners who might not know what TCKs are, so a taught culture kid, and Jaya, correct me if I'm wrong, is someone who spends a significant part of their developmental years in a culture different from their parents' culture or the culture of their passport country.
So specifically different to their passport culture, because there's the element that is not having legal connection in the place that they're emotionally connecting, but there is so many different kinds of cross-cultural kids that include those who are living outside their parents' culture. So TCKs are just one kind of cross-cultural kid. And I talk about all of these different layers of cross-cultural intersectionality. So you can be a TCK and also bicultural, biracial, and also child of an immigrant, and also, you know, all of the things.
Yeah, okay. And they're called third culture, again, pardon me for me, it's because the first culture is their parents, you know, home or heritage culture. The second culture is the host culture they grew up in. And the third culture is almost like a co-creative blend of both what they create for themselves, correct?
Well, that's how most people understand it. What I find more helpful is to talk about it as three types of cultures. Because when we talk about it as parents' culture and where we're living and what we create, then we start getting a lot of confusion around, well, am I a fourth culture kid, a fifth culture kid, sixth culture kid? Because so many TCKs have connected with way more than three cultures. 40% of TCKs I interviewed for Misunderstood had four or more countries they'd lived in. 10% had six or more. And so there's this breadth of cultural experiences. And then you've got 25% of the TCKs we've surveyed in both of our large scale studies came from mixed ethnicity families. So their parents were coming from different ethnicities, different cultures, different languages. So 1/4 of these large scale surveys, nearly 2,000 people, coming from families that already have multiple cultures just inside the family. So what I like to talk about is first culture being the legal culture. So that's the country that says you belong to me, right? We acknowledge you, we accept you, you're a citizen, you get a passport, you have permanent residency, like you have a legal stake here. Second culture being the geographic culture, and that's all the countries that I have had personal experience of. And then third culture being the culture of shared experience. So people who've had similar childhood experiences to me of being in between legal and geographic.
Geographic, okay.
Yeah, and so knowing what it's like to be building connections in a place that isn't where my parents are from or isn't where I have the passport citizen, like having the name on a passport that is an unfamiliar place to me.
Right.
And so I talk a lot about the TCK experience, the classic TCK experience and the immigrant kid experience being kind of the same but opposite, because in both cases you are caught between where my parents are from and where I'm living. And I'm sort of caught between allegiance to both or connection to both. The difference being for the immigrant kid, where I'm living now and I'm building my emotional connections is where I'm legally connected. Like I have my legal status here. Yeah. And for the TCK, where I'm living and making my connections is not where I have legal status. I have to go back to that parent culture that I may not be as emotionally connected to. So that being the difference between these two otherwise very similar experiences.
Okay. Thank you for that.
No, no worries.
Which brings us to my next question, by the way. So you spend so much of your time and your life, 20 years now it seems, working alongside these kids and helping them understand their unique experiences, right? And since we first spoke, the landscape across the world has shifted dramatically between global lockdowns, the rise of TikTok storytelling,
yes,
and this new wave of digital nomads and self-declared global citizens. And I feel like that the expat / TCK experience is being both amplified and in some ways redefined. So I'm curious to really hear from you. What are some of the biggest shifts you've noticed in the TCK or expat communities over the past few years?
I think there's so many people wrestling with this terminology. There's problems with the terminology, right? Like the word expat, we can just say it has this nice little defined thing where it's people who are living outside their passport
privilege,
country,
yeah,
but it has colonial roots,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
The fact that so many people who I would define as an expat are called migrant workers, right? They fit my definition of an expat, but people don't call them expats because they keep that word expat for people who have a certain level of privilege or have a certain kind of job, even though to me there's no difference. It doesn't matter what I think when that word has these cultural and colonial overtones. But what do we do? How do we find language that's going to do what we need it to do? And I don't think anyone's come up with an answer to these problems, but I think we still need to have the conversations. Even if there's no answer, the conversation itself is important. And the same thing with the TCK. Right. A lot of people are like, we just need to broaden the definition and put everyone under the umbrella. And I actually don't think that's the solution. That's why I like to talk about CCKs, cross-cultural kids, from Ruth Van Reckon's CCK model, because I think when we try to broaden the TCK to be everybody, we lose the fact that there are so many different experiences in the TCK world. So if you look at me and my husband and you say we're both TCKs, okay, great, we are. But my experience and his are completely different because he's a TCK and he's bicultural and he's biracial and he's the child of an immigrant. So there are four cross-cultural layers to his experience and only one to mine. That is not the same experience. And calling us both TCKs and just TCKs is erasing so much of that experience. And so I really like to lean into the intersectionality. And I started doing that at Misunderstood. I had a section when I looked at TCKs who are also immigrant kids and TCKs who are also bicultural, biracial, TCKs who are also internationally adopted, and looking at the intersections of these different cross-cultural experiences. Because if we erase that, we're missing really important pieces of identity and experience. And so whenever I'm working with international school educators, I bring this up because it's important for them to understand that just because the students in your classroom are cross-cultural kids doesn't mean they're having the same experience. You've got kids in that classroom who are nationals of the country that you're in, but they're having a cross-cultural experience because they're in this school being taught in this language and in this culture. And that's impacting their relationship with their families and their own country. And you have kids in this classroom who are biracial and they have one parent from this country or parents from completely different countries, or they're speaking multiple languages in the home or whatever's going on. And you've got kids who are moving from country to country to country, and you've kids who've lived in this country their whole life. There's a range of experiences, and finding a way that we don't erase those different experiences, I think, is really important. And also when we talk about cross-cultural kids generally, we understand that there are so many people, I would say the majority of the world's population, who have had some kind of cross-cultural experience in childhood, which means there are ways that we can understand each other. There's these points of crossover in our human experience that fights this terminal uniqueness thing that happens for a lot of TCKs where nobody understands what I've been through. Well, actually, there are a lot of people who understand different elements of what you've been through, and we can communicate and connect with each other on this emotional level.
I love that. It's very person-centered, and also taking into consideration that whenever we use certain terminologies, it can also be exclusive of other communities. So how do we make sure that we're bringing everyone to the table who needs to be part of that conversation? I love that.
And I think it's really hard because there's no easy answers. There are so many people who identify with that TCK word name. And so I'm never going to tell someone you can't be a TCK and you can't use this language and you can't use this vocabulary if it's helpful to you. But at the same time, I want to make sure that we aren't erasing parts of you or parts of the cross-cultural community as we do that.
Thank you. Thank you. As we're winding down, I just had some, you know, tying up question first to kind of tie up the whole episode. So, and I feel like, let me get started with this particular question because it came up a lot during your first episode, which you're going to tag in the show notes, by the way, for those who are curious to know. During that episode, we talked a lot about, you know, homesickness and that constant search for home. And has your definition of home changed over time?
Ooh, good question. I think it has. Because since that episode, I've done a lot of research talking to adult TCKs, CCKs about their concepts of home. And I've developed this framework to better understand home and creating home. I call it the facets of home. I've got these five different facets that make up home. And what I discovered is that when you have, it only takes four or five of these to make a place feel like home. And so there are ways that a place can become home or stop feeling like home as these different facets change over time. And so home is something that is created in a place when we have connections, these meaningful connections to that place. So it can be more than one place at once. It can be, it can change over time. And I think I used to think that home was kind of more about the people than the place. And I think that shifted. I think home really is a place, but it's our connections to people that are crucial to making a place feel like home. Whether that place is the house or apartment you're living in, the city, the country, it doesn't matter what scale. Those connections are a significant part of what make it home.
Thank you for that. That's all right. It's very poetic the way you just said that. Thank you. Thank you. Now, you've done quite a lot, right? And in the past 7 years, you've also shared some of the experiences that has had you almost like recenter what your capabilities are, and also shaped your perspective on so many things. But I'm also curious to know, what are you dreaming about right now, or even building towards right now?
Other than moving to where my husband is,
right,
to be your dreams, husband, other than that,
yeah, we pray that happens. So, yeah.
When I started the research for the book I'm doing right now, I was planning to write kind of a guidebook for adult cross-cultural kids of like, you know, finding yourself and creating your sense of identity and all these things. But over time, I realized what I really need is a series of little books that are practical, that are short chapters, that have reflection questions. And so the first one is nearly done. The first one's going to be on change and home. The working title is Roots Without Fear. So that's the one I'm working on right now. So hopefully that'll be available in the next year. And then I've got a whole bunch of projects that I've been working on with other people to work on different topics. Like I want one on identity integration, and I want one on race and privilege and the intersection of that with cross-cultural individuals, because it's a different experience. If you've lived in some places as the majority ethnicity and other places as the minority ethnicity, and the difference between being a privileged minority and a oppressed minority and things like that, and what this looks like in the international school context. And so Dan Altano and I have been talking about this for a couple of years, so eventually we'll get that happening. And I've talked with someone else about writing a book on queer TCKs and that experience. So, yeah, stay tuned. I always have a million projects. It's just a question of which one comes.
Yeah. And you said 95%. I wonder what more you'll have done with 100% of your brain capacity. Hey, look at you just making the rest of us just look like we're just not doing anything for the past 2 or 3. But I'm so happy that, I'm happy to hear all the things you're up to, and it's very encouraging. You know, despite the setback you've had, you've really had quite a productive past few years, and it seems like the future is still, you know, packed full of so many things you want to do.
There's always things I want to do.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens in the next 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, what do you, in your space of TCK and the work you do, what are some things you think should be explored that we haven't, when I say we, I'm talking about your community, so I'm just going to borrow that we haven't explored more of, that would be very useful to talk about or explore?
Honestly, I am so excited to keep analyzing the data that we've just collected at TCK Training, collected in 2024. In a big survey.
Yeah.
We've only released the first, like we did a first look that we did in January. We dropped a bunch of free research from that. And one of the most important things out of that was data on mental health, long-term mental health in TCKs. But there's so much more that I'm still working on analyzing. I haven't even touched some of it yet. Like, we have data that I haven't even started analyzing yet on experiences of microaggression and racism and bullying and other kinds of experiences that TCKs have had in their school settings and in their communities, to just understand more about their experiences. So I'm excited to see what we have there. We're currently looking at a whole bunch of preventive care factors and resilience factors to see what is helping TCKs in the long run, to look and see, what has the most impact on them. So I'm really excited for all of that. I'm constantly connecting with other researchers around the world, with different things that they're looking at and working on. I think one thing I would love to see more data on is what is the impact of visiting your passport country or spending time in your passport country throughout childhood. So what's the difference between going back just for summer holidays or going back for a year now and then, or doing the 3 years in, 3 years out? Like, looking at a large range of people who had different experiences connecting with their passport country and how that correlates with their experiences as adults and their feeling toward their passport country. I'd really like to learn more about that, and I get a lot of questions about that. So that's an area I would love to learn more about in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. And we usually because this is like, and thanks for sharing all of that.
Especially the data-driven process you guys are going about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope everything goes well.
Thanks. Well, I have research interns at the moment, so it's great fun watching adult
interns themselves
get engaged and learning how to do this and bringing their own thoughts to the table. Like my current team, I have a half German, half Chinese TCK who's about to move from Germany to Colombia. I have a Costa Rican TCK who's just moved to the US and I think is about to move again. And I have a Japanese TCK, well, half Japanese, half Filipino TCK, currently in Japan. Right? And that's the team I'm working with. So we're spread around the world and they all have different experiences. They've got different educational backgrounds and they all bring their own perspectives to the table. And it's great fun doing that together.
Thanks for sharing that. So two more questions. The last time you're on the podcast, I remember and this was when my flyers were still a little bit wacky, which I'm not kidding myself, because that was the beginning of, just a beautiful beginnings. We won't be here now without the past we've had, right?
Exactly.
So I'm not knocking that out. You had a picture of you with your glasses and one of your safari hats, and you're holding a cook, I think. And it was very Australian in a way. And very cute. And then you were living in China, right? But I'm curious to know, given just the changes you've made geographically, what's your relationship with China right now, as far as, maybe considering moving back or what kind of touch? Because that was your home for a while.
Yeah, it was my home for 13 years. It was my husband's home from the age of 12 until, leaving under forced conditions in his late 30s. It was a big move. We've decided that we can't see a reason that would make us want to move there permanently again. Largely because there is no permanent. It's 1 year visa at a time. And the way the visa system is currently structured, it would have to be a huge change in how we're living our lives to qualify to be able to live there. And I think we both still have some trauma associated with the way it all went down. What's interesting for me is in writing my current book on change and home, and I did some examples of my facets of home. I make these little charts where you can chart out those facets for different places or different times. So I did one of all the different cities I've lived in, and I did one for Beijing over time. And as I worked through that, creating this example for the book, I realized just how much my relationship with China has changed in the last few years, how I no longer have the same sense of feeling safe and accepted there that I used to. I don't have the same sense of familiarity because it's been years since I stepped foot in that country. I don't have the same community because most of the people I knew are gone. The communities I was part of have changed dramatically. So many of these different factors of home just don't exist for me anymore. And it was kind of shocking to realize that, but also gave me a concrete reason why I've been losing this sense of home connected with Beijing. And it's become a thing now. Like whatever teaching I'm doing, whatever speaking I'm doing, whatever writing I'm doing, I end up accidentally teaching myself where I'm like, oh, wow, this is cathartic for me. This is helpful for me in ways I wasn't expecting. That's become a sort of common thread through a lot of my work in the last few years, accidentally supporting myself through my own work.
Because we don't, who will, right?
Yeah. Like writing, so my second book I co-wrote with someone else, and it's basically a TCK book, but for Australian families. So the experiences of Australian kids who lived overseas and what it's like coming back into Australian society, and what do you need to know about being an Australian adult. But all these different stories from people we interviewed and being like, oh my gosh, that's my story. Other people had this experience too. It's not just me. literally the experience I try to give to everyone where that I'm working with and I'm writing for, I was getting that experience. And it was unexpected and cathartic and lovely.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. I guess I know you've done several podcasts. When you came on the podcast, was there your first podcast, by the way? I don't think so.
I honestly don't remember. Probably not my first, but it was early.
It's not you.
I definitely hadn't done much.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember how I even got to meet you. Was it through Adrian, my friend, or did I just cool email you? Wow, it's been 8 years. Well, whatever the stars aligned, I'm so thankful for that. I guess my final question for you with this, if you were to listen to this podcast again, or if you were to come back again in the next 7 years, I hope it doesn't take that long anyways, but just in case it's 7 years, because we seem to have that pattern going on, right? What kind of message would you like to leave for your future self right now as a way of just shaping your future?
That's an amazing question. I love that. It's almost like sending a message in a bottle, like right through time and space.
Yes.
As much as I look forward to the work, I can't wait to see what character you have developed in all that time and what kind of person you are. Because the work's exciting, but the character is forever.
Oof. Say that again for those that didn't hear that. Like, the work is exciting, but the character is forever. Tanya, they just waxing lyrically on the podcast, and I'm the one with the mic. I'll pass mine for you to drop, but it's a little bit expensive.
Yeah, mine's sitting back here because I already broke it. Must drop it too often.
Thanks. That's very powerful stuff. And even though you left that for yourself, I'm sure, like, for me and some of our listeners will take that as something they can also keep to heart.
Mm.
Yeah. And
reflecting on the concussion, I think, brings me there, right? It's been a while since I, like, reflected on that, but, like, the growth through that whole period of time. I remember I used to, probably around the time I was talking to you that first time, I used to only half joke about, you marry a person who has all these character qualities you admire, and then you get annoyed by them constantly because they're just so kind and so generous and so gentle, and you're just like, just be obnoxious like me so I don't feel like such a terrible person. Like, I remember making those jokes, and I think I am. I'm growing in these areas, in these character qualities over time, and I love that I can see that growth in myself. And I want to keep getting better.
And that's beautiful. That's beautiful. The challenge and also the support that you need, that we all should, you know, keep exploring within ourselves, because that's like the pathway to self-development, right? Right. Any words of encouragement you want to pass on to a podcast that is 7 years old? Something to put into the collection, please. No pressure.
when we did this back then, I feel like you were one of a few voices out there that were really exploring interesting cultural differences and shifts and perspectives. And I love that now there's a whole bunch of places sort of having these kind of conversations. But keep pushing those boundaries and keep pushing those conversations and keep us talking about things that we need to talk about.
Right. Thank you. And thank you so much. Like, I learned a lot from you the last time, and I knew when my assistant was kind of like shuffling through names, I'm like, no, Tanya's got to go back. We've got to put her on there. Because your passion, and I'm, you know, for real, your passion about, you know, this community has really shaped a lot of our work, especially when we talk to parents, you know, and considering the generational gaps between their children and that desire for cultural preservation, but knowing that, hey, where you were born and where your kids are right now and the space they're trying to create for themselves are so totally different things. So how do we co-create like that space where they feel heard and they don't alienate you. And I always have that at the back of my mind. And you were one of the people that really planted that seed in me. Because I work with a lot of, African families, and where cultural values are so, sometimes very, very strong.
Yeah.
And those, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But sometimes those are held so strongly that the child feels like very left out. So how do you encourage and empower parents while at the same time making them understand what their child's realities might be? Like, you're in this new space now. They're not going to be Nigerian like you were. Their realities are so different. They're not going to be, Congolese or, Liberian as you were, or even, Korean as you were. So, yeah, thanks for, all the work you do. It's not for naught. You've shaped a lot of voices like mine in this space. I just wanted to give that back to you.
Thank you. You're reminding me of, I was doing something with one of the branches of the UN, and we did this virtual talk with a bunch of their employees, introducing some of the TCK concepts and how it impacts that parent-child relationship. And this Nigerian man who'd been with the UN for 25 years said, "Why has nobody told me this before? This will change my relationship with my kids, but it would have changed my relationship with my kids so much earlier if I'd known before."
Yeah.
Right? These conflicts I have with my teenagers that now I see in a completely different light. And that's why I do what I do, right? Is parents and children who love each other and just miss each other sometimes, not because of a lack of love, not because of a lack of care, but just because of an unrecognized cultural difference.
Thank you so much, and I hope everything goes well for you in congrats on the third book.
Thank you.
And I hope with that success comes a reunification with your husband on a more prominent level.
Yes.
So again, thank you for coming back, not just to the podcast, but into the space we're creating for growth, for curiosity, for cultural reconciliation and deeper conversations. You've been, like I said earlier on, you've been such a steady voice in the world of cross-cultural identity, and it's a gift to hear how your story continues to unfold. And thank you so much for reminding us that home isn't always a place. It's often a story still being written. And to our listeners, thank you for being part of this 7-year journey. So whether you've been here since Diane's first episode in October of 2018, or this is your first time tuning in, we're so glad you're here. So keep staying curious, stay connected, and keep sharing your story. Until next time, with all of my love, thank you so much, everyone. And I'm Tanya. I hope to have you back on again, but hopefully not 7 years from now.
I would love to be
Hey,
back
when you
again.
Launch your book, you can come back on
the
podcast.
There we go, yes.
And talk
we'll
about
come and talk when book, I get the book published.
Yeah. And you have tons of resources. Tanya has done a lot of work. Like, you just need to go to her Instagram page. It's almost like a library of resources. So for parents who have had something today that kind of talked at their heartstrings, or even for their kids that might want to learn more about how they can support themselves or their peers, where can they find you, Tanya?
So I'm Misunderstood TCK on Instagram, Facebook. And you can also go to TCK Training, again, Instagram, Facebook. That's the company I'm working for. So many resources for adult TCKs, CCKs, as well as the parents and the teachers and everybody else.
Yeah. She's written tons of books, like tons of resources, but she's written 3 books. Then one of her very first book was Misunderstood TCK itself, which is very befitting for the work she does. Yeah. Anyways, thank you so much. I won't take too much of your time anymore than I have. I appreciate
it's been wonderful.
Podcast.
I've really enjoyed spending time with you today.
Thank you. And I wish you the best of health as well.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.